Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Welcome to HRN on tour at Charleston Wine and Food 2022. I'm Liza Hamm, and today we are broadcasting live from the heart of the Culinary Village. This episode is made possible thanks to the support of Ben's Friends and Indigo Road Restaurant Group. I feel very lucky today because I'm here to interview the Dreamboats. The Dreamboats are restaurateur Ben Tal and chef Charlie Layton. Now, we're going to give a little brief bio. You're both from the UK. You both began working in kitchens there. You came to New York then, Ben, had a successful hospitality group before moving to Charleston as brand director of the very amazing Dewberry Hotel. But then you started your own design group, Basic Projects. Part of that is an amazing restaurant we love because we have had HRN events there, Basic Kitchen, of which Charlie is the chef.
Nailed it. That's
the food part. But what we're really here to talk about is their upcoming adventure. And they are planning to participate in the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, in which they will row a total of 3,000 nautical miles across the Atlantic Ocean. Welcome, guys. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
I think I speak for everyone when they're saying, why are you going to do this?
That is what everyone says. Sometimes you just have to push yourself, don't you?
No, and there's been, it's funny, this is certain things in your life, you just sort of, you hear of someone doing it or you read about it and you say, you know, oh, one day I just love to do that. It really resonates with me. And Charlie and I came at it separately. But I had a friend who did it in 2013, and he told me all these stories, and I just said, you know, one day when the time's right, that's something I would love to do. And it's a 2-year build-up, so during the pandemic, I knew Charlie had interest in it, and he'd always wanted to do it. It came about through when we were doing a review, like a 6-month employee check-in, we ended up just talking about rowing the Atlantic, and that was it, so...
Yeah. It was quite funny. We sat down and was like, oh, any goals? I was like, well, I'm going to row across the Atlantic before I'm 30.
Short term, long term.
And this was when I was 28, so I didn't have a lot of time to get it done. Luckily, I met someone that wanted to do it as well. So.
And do you both have experience rowing? Like, tell me even...
Zero
experience rowing.
You know, our boat was actually meant to get here this weekend. It's arriving in 2 weeks. It's somewhere, ironically, in the Atlantic on a big boat. It was made in England. And when the boat gets here, we've got an amazing rowing coach who's coming over from the UK to sort of work with us for a couple of weeks to get us sort of set. And we've been rowing in smaller boats, but obviously... Ocean rowing is a very, very niche sport, and it's tiny here in the US. So we had our boat made in England. Our experience right now in ocean rowing is zero. But soon it'll be...
I mean, I've watched a lot of videos.
I think that counts.
Yeah, I do too.
So then walk back and tell me, like, you make this decision to do it. What do you start to do to mentally and physically prepare if you don't actually have a rowboat to practice on?
Well, we kind of agreed to sign up, and then it did get kind of put on the back burner a little bit until March of 2020. So we had to close the restaurant. The world was standing still, and we were kind of like, well, I don't really like standing still. And that's when we really started to train. First off with just like getting a baseline of fitness. And then we've been working in now to more of the mental side of it. We were really lucky to partner with Synchronicity, who are a local recovery centre for both physical and mental recovery, and they're based in Mount Pleasant here in Charleston. And with them, we're working out plans of like how to really test the mentality of it, because when it comes to the event, it's going to be 70-80% all in the mind and 20% physical. You can be as strong as you like and lift heavy weights in the gym, but that's not going to get you across the ocean.
Yeah, and just to tell anyone who's listening, so the basic premise is it's 3,000 miles across the Atlantic Ocean. Charlie and I are going in a 25-foot ocean rowing boat where you can sleep in the back, and it has a watertight cabin. And we will row 2 hours on, 2 hours off, 24 hours a day for anywhere between 40 and 60 days. And we'll take all our own food, we have a water maker, all our supplies will be, it's unsupported. So as Charlie's saying, the mental side, I'm sitting here on the couch with Charlie about, we're touching each other. Imagine if we're on this couch together for 40 days and there's some big seas and we're cooking on it and we got to go to the bathroom on it and we're washing it. So that relationship is really critical. So we've done some sort of stress testing. We get up very early in the morning and work out together and do some pretty intense stuff before why most people are still in bed, especially if you're in the hospitality business.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of chefs getting up at 4 a.m. to go to the gym is not something that when I was coming up with.
Well, and also, I mean, do you typically spend that much time together? And does synchronicity somehow help you with the team dynamics?
I think we spend quite a lot of time together. We did in the restaurants a lot beforehand. And then just as we've, working together, I moved here to work with Ben. So we kind of had a relationship before and it's kind of blossomed over the course of training, which is a relief.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things we're working on. It's just like, what's your skill set? What's your weakness? And, so there's Rose sort of two parts to it as well. Is that the logistics of actually, we both have full-time jobs and like putting this campaign together to row the ocean, around ocean, a massive cost up front to get to the start line. We've got some incredible sponsors who have helped us do that. And so juggling these different things, like Charlie was doing a cooking class last night with one of our sponsors. And he's also doing like 5 things at this festival this weekend. So it's like, and you were up at the sort of times I'm talking about. So there's so much going on. So I think in a way, just getting to the start line prepares you for this.
And it also sounds like it's as challenging as it's going to be. It's also going to be a nice break from normal life and a busy routine.
Everyone says the first week, once you get onto that ocean and all you have to do is just row, eat and sleep and kind of look after your small environment, it's a liberating experience.
So you mentioned earlier sort of the weaknesses and strengths. Could you tell me a little bit so far of what you each think about them, as well as like, is there anything you're most excited about when you think about getting out on the Atlantic?
I know my weakness. It's all about food for me a lot of the time. So when I can't eat something nice that I enjoy, I get kind of grumpy. And normally that's, we did an event, an endurance event. It was about the 16th hour where we were not eating properly. And I was like, yeah, I could go to bed now. I could just leave it. And I think it's why we make a good team as well, because that's where Ben really gets going and digs in. I'm great at starting stuff and high energy into it. And then Ben comes and gets us to the finish. So
diesel engine. I think a lot of the weaknesses they bear, like the discipline is something that like you can't hide from this event. You can't hide from the training. You're basically looking at this mirror every day. I think a lot of like teamwork and understanding is just each other's strengths and allowing that and weaknesses and allowing like space. If we want to get my weaknesses, we'll be here till Christmas.
Okay.
You asked about it, what's exciting about this. The sort of cliche about this sort of the journey, not the destination. This has been totally transformative in our lives and it's so positive. The people we've met, the things that we're doing, the training, the other people who have rowed an ocean who we get to Zoom with, it's been one of the most, the physically being in the sort of best shape of your life, it's just been an amazing journey so far.
And you're also raising funds for two charities.
Yeah, two.
So tell me a little bit about both the organizations and why you chose them or a relationship you have with them.
Yeah, for sure. So Green Heart is the first one we're raising for, and they're based here in Charleston. They are a schoolyard education system where they build small urban farms in local schools and teach kids about not just about their environment, about where food comes from, about the positivity of good diet and what to eat. It's really something that, like, when I first started working with them through Basic, it was something that I wish that I'd grown up with, because it's something that's so important, but you don't learn about it unless you really go out there and do. So that's our first...
Yeah, and Edible Schoolyard would be the most, you know, probably well-known program like it. And then the other one is 2041 Foundation, and that was set up by our great friend Rob Swan, who was the first man on Earth to walk to the North and South Pole. And he's spent the last 40 years protecting something called the Antarctic Treaty, which is up in 2041. And so right now, no one owns Antarctica. It's a land for peace and science. And the treaty is up in 2041. So every year, Rob takes about 100 people down to Antarctica, young people, educators, people who are interested in saving this world, and takes them down and does this leadership programs down there. And so it's really, really effective. I got to do it in 2016, and it changed my life. So.
Now, can you tell listeners, like, when this exactly will start?
Yeah.
How long it's going to last, and how you plan to celebrate afterwards?
So, I mean, it starts December 12th. It's going to last, Charlie...
We're aiming for between 40 and 50 days.
Okay.
Hopefully 40.
And, and how are we going to celebrate? We'll probably have a break from each other. We'll be a celebration. We'll have a big party this time next year in Charleston, South Carolina. And in the restaurants, and we'll probably take a bit of a break from rowing. But
I always make the joke, so the finish line's in Antigua, and whenever anyone asks me, I was like, well, I've always wanted to go to Antigua, so I figured I'd row there. It's the best way to get there, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely. And then you deserve to have a very good cocktail afterwards for as long as you want to be there.
We'll be talking about our meal, I think, for 40 days.
How did you two first meet?
Yes.
So I was working at a small pub in Cornwall in the southwest of England, and it was owned by a London-based oyster company. They put it on the market because they closed their oyster farm, and Ben and his brother bought the pub, and Ben and Kate, his wife, came over to renovate and kind of fix it up because it hadn't really been touched in about 30 years, and they completely gutted it. And that's how we really bonded, because it was a lot of fun. They kept everyone on to...
That'll do it.
Charlie's not saying... I've lived in America for a long time now. My wife's American. And we came to where my brother lives and Charlie's living. It's very sleepy, sort of little fishing village, and bulldozed this place. It was like sort of an episode of like Flip or Flop or something, like an HGTV. And everyone was like, what are these people doing to this... Pub's been there for 300 years. So we had like a mass exodus on day one. And Charlie, you legend, you stayed, and we became great friends. And obviously now he's such a talent. And
I will say, I actually tried to quit. I was going to be like, I was living in Cornwall and I was like, oh, I need to move to a bigger city. I put my notice in with Ben's brother, Xander. And about 2 days later, Ben phoned me and was like, oh, so you're going to move to America, aren't you? He's like, okay.
Done.
So when did you move to Charleston?
December of 2018.
Okay. So tell me about both of you living in Charleston. What do you love most about it?
Honestly, my whole life changed when I moved here. I was very much in the cliche, like, kitchen life of work 18-hour days, go to the pub after work, drink beer, wake up, drink coffee to make sure you feel human again, do an 18-hour day, drink beer, drink coffee. And it was like a rinse and repeat cycle. I really wasn't looking after myself. And then I moved to Charleston and Ben gave me his bike, Peggy, who he rode across the country on. And I was like, okay, well, that's how I'm going to get around Charleston. It's flat here. I may as well. I landed and I was just over 325 pounds. I cycled everywhere. Farm meetings over on John's Island, I would ride there, 26-mile round trip. Meetings at the post house when we were just opening it, I would bike there, and I literally just grabbed the bull by the horns and really went for it. And then through that and responding to what we were doing at Basic and like kind of what the mission statement was of like making vegetables fun and accessible and not being like an exclusive diet place of like, oh yeah, we only serve like plant-based food. It's like, oh no, we do everything, but like, have you tasted this vegetable? It's beautiful. And kind of grabbing that by the horns, it really affected my lifestyle. And I went plant-based January of last year and I haven't really looked back.
Really has changed your life.
Charlie is, and Charlie just went home for the first time in 3 years because he got stuck here with the pandemic because of his visa situation. And you move to the south from England, you think you're going to come back like just eating all this great food and just you hear all those stories. And Charlie arrived back in Cornwall, just like a different person. I can only imagine the face of your mates in the pub.
No one recognized me. I had to go and tell people that I was there, like sit with them and be like, this
really
is me
neat.
Now.
Yeah, so it's amazing. And for us as a, you know, Charlie's just sort of hit the nail on the head, but as a company with Basic Projects and what we've got to do here, and we've got a new restaurant opening in 4 weeks on Solomon's Island, and we've got some really exciting plans with sort of some of the stuff that Charlie's talking about with sort of healthy food, but in a really fun, approachable way. And I think it's just a great city to be in for all the things that we're doing. And honestly, what happened over the last couple of years, we've had some amazing people move here and relocate here, which has helped a lot as well.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the new restaurant opening?
Yeah, so the new restaurant's going to be called Solomon's Fish Camp. And it's out on Solomon's Island, which is a barrier island 10 miles from downtown. It was a restaurant. It was established in 1988. And we have just kind of breathed new life into it. We've been working on it for 2 years because we got it just before the pandemic. We say, and I don't know if this is relevant, but like our whole design has been around, you know, if you could still smoke in restaurants, you'd probably smoke in this one. So it's all like paneled and tons of fisherman stuff. And then the food's going to be all kind of South Carolina sustainably sourced seafood, grilled or fried, and super classic.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, no, we're really excited about it. Different to Basic Kitchen. But good. Everyone needs a bit of both.
And finally, I should ask what specifically you've been doing for the festival.
Oh, yeah. So we are going to be at the Cocktail Queens event tomorrow with Basic Kitchen, doing some nice little pass canapes. And then we have a signature brunch at Basic on Sunday with Stephen Satterfield from Miller Union. We're at dreamboats.us on Instagram. Dreamboats.us is our website as well. So pop on and have a look, have a follow.
Sounds great. Thank you all.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to HRN's live coverage of Charleston Wine and Food Festival. I'm Liza Hamm. Special thanks to Ben's Friends, an addiction and substance abuse support group for members of the food and beverage industry, and to Indigo Road Restaurant Group for making our coverage possible. You can listen to all our coverage on our podcast, Heritage Radio Network on Tour, and find it on heritageradionetwork.org or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll be back.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.